I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Conquest Chronicles podcast. This is Matt here, along with Dina, and we got Utah coming up. It's an early game. It's a Friday night game. Utah, who is ranked number 10 in the nation, come into the LA Coliseum to face USC, who is coming off of a frustrating and heartbreaking overtime loss to BYU. Not the best that you want coming into this game. You don't want to lose to a team like BYU coming into a marquee game, but it could be the wake up call that they have. So let's go ahead, jump right into it. Dina, how are we doing tonight?
Pretty good. What about you?
Doing pretty good. Heading into this game, interested to see how USC responds. I think that's the biggest thing, is I'm interested to see how USC responds to in this game against Utah. Because we do know a loss brings us closer to the end of the Clay Helton era, or it could be the end of the Clay Helton era, and a win changes the perception around. Going into the game against Washington on the road. And then right after that, you have a bye week and then Notre Dame coming up. So they have a few more ranked teams to play. They have Utah, Washington, then they have Notre Dame. Then you have Arizona State and I believe Cal. They have Arizona State, Cal, and Oregon, who are ranked. So they got a few more ranked teams they got to play on the schedule, because I believe Cal is ranked now.
Yeah, they need to win this game to get a good footing in the Pac-12 South.
Well, right now they're currently in. Right now, they're currently a 3-point underdog. I think it went down to 3. I think they're
it was three and a half when I checked an hour ago.
It's 3.5 now?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're a 3.5-point underdog. It was 4 for most of the week.
But then ESPN and the Massey prediction site has USC winning, so it was kind of odd.
ESPN, I can see. I don't know. Like, then again, here's something that I think what plays a factor in it is B. Utah has not really played anybody. Then again, they played BYU and USC lost to BYU and the Utes beat BYU, blew them out actually. Or beat them pretty significantly. They didn't really blow them out, but you add that, also add to the fact that it's at home, it's at the Coliseum, and Utah has not won at the, they have never won at the LA Coliseum, actually, believe it or not.
Wow.
So a little history before we go back and discuss the BYU game. Here's some news or some history here that a lot of people don't understand. Utah, in the history of the Utah-USC meeting, Utah has never won at the LA Memorial Coliseum. They haven't. The last time I think they beat USC in Los Angeles was 1916. That was the last time they beat USC in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And the game was not played at the L.A. Memorial Coliseum, because a lot of people forget the L.A. Memorial Coliseum was built in 1920. It was opened in 1923, correct? And so the when the Utes and the Trojans played, the Trojans were playing at Fiesta Park in downtown Los Angeles. And when the Utes beat them, it was at Fiesta Park. It wasn't at the L.A. Memorial Coliseum. It was at Fiesta Park in downtown Los Angeles, which I don't know what it is now. You can look it. You can look that up on your own. But Utah has also faced UCLA, because a lot of people forget UCLA also played at the L.A. Coliseum before moving to the Rose Bowl. They have never won at the L.A. Coliseum. They have never beaten USC nor UCLA at the Coliseum. And I think somebody said it went as far back as I don't think Utah has ever won. I don't think Utah has won in Los Angeles since 1916.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I have to look that up, but I don't think Utah won in Los Angeles. I don't think they've won in L.A. since. But I know they haven't beaten the USC in Los Angeles since 1916. And that game was played at Fiesta Park. So there's a historical standpoint there. So, but going back, as everyone knows, USC lost to BYU in overtime. I could really go into how all of this plays out. By the way, Utah did win, and they won in LA count. They beat UCLA in Pasadena, but in Los Angeles city limits, Utah haven't won in Los Angeles city limits in years. Let's put it like that. Anyway, moving forward, that was by Winspedia. I just forgot in 2016 maybe. You know. But everyone knows USC lost in overtime. What bugs me is the reaction, and here's why it bugs me. It bugs me on all aspects of it. As you know, any USC loss, people think the world is coming to an end. The world's coming to an end. Everything's falling apart. You know, fire everybody, right? Even during the Pete Carroll era, when USC lost, it was a shocking thing. It was a shocking thing. It was a very shocking thing during the Pete Carroll era. USC loses, you're like, what the heck? Like, it's typical now. The first thing I have an issue with is just people just saying, when they analyze it and people go, why did they run the ball? Or, you know, why this, why that? Where was the play calling? Graham Harrell and play calling, and Graham Harrell's play calling was not the best. Utah dropped 8 in the coverage, played soft coverage, you saw no bubble screens, and that was that. I don't jump on Graham Harrell like that, but I didn't like how the offense was. I didn't like it. I didn't like the adjustments, and it was just typical. It was typical. Typical USC loss, typical offense, anemic offense, typical failing to adjust. I had an issue with Clancy Pendergast. I'm kind of over Clancy Pendergast. That's my issue. Because Clancy Pendergast didn't dial up any blitzes. You're without Christian Rector, your best pass rusher. Why is it whenever USC is without a pass rusher, they don't blitz to create pressure. They let Wilson get all the time in the world back there to stand in a pocket. And when they got pressure, they couldn't tackle him. Hence, George Reyna did the same thing against Fresno State. Dina and I were there. It was the same thing. I don't understand why there's no emphasis in tackling at practice. I don't get why there's no I'm tired of hearing that this is a different team and nothing's done. You know, and we get the same team. I'm tired of the fans who sit there going, "Oh, that's it. Fire him. Do this, do that." Like, if you think you can do a better job, please go and step up. But not only that, I understand the criticism, but at the same time, I think people are taking it over the edge. And I think that's where we have to calm down. Because we sit there and we go, well, they're not supposed to lose to BYU. No, you're right. They're not supposed to lose to BYU. But let's not act like BYU is not a dangerous team at home. Let's not act like Clay Helton and playing at, you know, playing on the road under Clay Helton is not a struggle. It hasn't been a struggle. Now, another issue I've had is with the players. And hear me out here. Every year, when people talk about the coaches, players jump to social media and go, "Oh, that's our coach. That's our coach. We ride for our coach. You know, if you want to blame anybody, blame us." Well, yeah. Okay, you're playing for your coach. But at the same time, you're not prepared. You're getting shoved around. You're getting bullied around against a three-man front. You're giving up passes like crazy. You're not tackling. I understand it's coaching. I understand as players, you guys have to make the plays and everything. But if you're playing for your coach, then you would do absolutely everything to make sure your coach get fired and play like you guys want it. Now, as unfair as that may be, I'm tired of seeing that. I'm tired of hearing that. I feel like it's talk every single time. It's all talk. Stanford is where we saw some substance to it. The beginning of Fresno State is where we saw some substance to it. We need to see it consistently. When your coach is under fire, granted, you're defending him, but we want some results too. Like, fans want results. So I'm just tired of all of it. I'm tired of all of it. I hope, I really want hope USC wins it. I'm not like every person else. Where USC is like, "Oh, well, a loss brings us to the end of Clay Helton." If anything, you want this program to succeed moving forward. And that's what USC needs right now. But they lost to BYU. It was lack of adjustments, lack of tackling. It was a lack of a lot of things and that needed to be fixed. And I hope that they addressed it this week in practice. That's all I'll say on the BYU game. And other than that, Zach Wilson is one heck of a quarterback. He is one heck of a quarterback. I don't know if you've seen Dina, but he is one heck of a quarterback.
No, I didn't watch the BYU game. I was driving to Arizona.
Be glad, but Wilson is pretty darn good. Wilson gives you a lot of Johnny Manziel vibes on the field as a player, not like the other stuff. But
I just wonder if how good he would be if we got pressure on him, though.
That's the number one thing. When they put pressure on him, he wasn't able to make certain throws. But it's like that with any quarterback. You put pressure on him. But with Clancy Pendergast's defense, there wasn't a blitz. They sent three or four, and that was it. They didn't blitz at all. And Pendergast is known to be aggressive in the blitz, and they have not done that.
Well, We haven't been aggressive in the blitz for years.
No, because last year they were kind of were aggressive. They just couldn't
generate
a pass
rush. Porter Gustin
was
aggressive.
Yeah,
Gustin was aggressive. Because like, after he got hurt, no one, like...
Rector disappeared. But Rector
didn't do anything.
But Rector is, like, the player who, if you, like, when you key on one guy as a pass rusher, when you key on one pass rusher, it either opens up for everyone else, or, well, pretty much it opens for everyone else. Christian Rector, when Nwosu was there and when Rector was eating after Gustin went down, Rector had teams had to account for Nwosu. And then here come Rector. Now you have to figure out how to block both of them.
Right.
Same goes for, you know, the same goes for Drake Jackson. Drake Jackson, he's a physical and an athletic beast, but he also has Christian Rector. After that, there's nobody else that really steps up. Hunter Echols, I hope Hunter Echols will be that person. But this is, but they're likely getting Rector back. They're likely getting Rector back. So that helps. That helps with pass rush. But regardless, they need to create pressure on Tyler Huntley this Friday. They need to create pressure on him.
Yeah, they need Tyler Huntley through the first couple of games of the season. He only has four touchdowns, no interceptions, and a pretty high completion percentage.
Who they're playing. I'm sorry.
He didn't have any touchdowns passing touchdowns against BYU. Where he kills you, and this has been the case for the past couple of games, the quarterbacks that USC's faced is with his legs. So if they can't figure out a way to contain a mobile quarterback, then this is going to be a long game.
Right. And here's the thing. What a lot of people don't get is that Utah's defense is already going to be something. It's already going to be difficult. That's a task right there. With a freshman quarterback going against the top defense in the conference, that's already a task. That is already a task itself. If you cannot contain a mobile quarterback, then there's a lot of issues. Because if you think about it, too, they got to face Arizona coming up soon. So what are you going to do against Khalil Tate? You got to play against Dorian Thompson Robinson. He's a mobile quarterback.
Jaden Daniels, mobile.
Jaden Daniels, mobile. So here you face multiple mobile quarterbacks. If you can't contain it, then that's an issue. If you can't get pressure on quarterbacks, that's an issue. The one time I've seen them generate any type of pressure on a quarterback was against Stanford. Am I wrong on this, Dina?
No, that's the, what, is that the, one of the, do we get any sacks against BYU?
Two. No, three. I think there's three.
Well,
either two or three. But USC's defensive line is good enough. USC's defensive line is good enough to create pressure.
One of their strongest, if not their strongest, groups.
But I just don't understand why is it against BYU they had issue creating pressure like that? That's the one of the things that really I couldn't understand. Yeah, USC had two sacks, BYU had three. I mean, right now, USC, I think, has 7 sacks on the season, or I forgot how many sacks they have so far this season. I think it's 7 or 9, and Utah is right up there in sacks.
Yeah, we'll see what Graham Harrell's made of, because, you know, like you said, Utah has the best defense in the conference. You know, I think what makes a great offensive coordinator isn't just sticking to what they say they are on paper. Like, we're an air raid offense, but okay, but if it's not there, don't throw it. You got to take what the defense gives you. I don't think there's any reason if we're on, you know, if we're a couple yards out from the goal line, we should be throwing it. When you have Malapai, Carr, and Step in your, you know, in your back pocket, there's no reason for it.
Why aren't you using Step more against physical teams? And he is a big physical back himself who can break tackles like that.
Yeah, I think Step, you know, made the case these past couple games for him to get into the rotation, but, you know, we'll see if that happens.
I mean,
you know, this is gonna tell us a lot about Graham Harrell, this game.
It is. It really is, because we've been hearing about how this is supposed to be for playmakers. This is an offense that best utilizes the playmakers and stuff like that. But all I'm saying with this is, let's see some bubble screens. Let's see some screens. Let's see something, you know, if they're going to play off, then let's see something. If you, you know, other than that, don't, you can't put it in the point where he is forcing his throw. And Slovis got to do better too. Yes, he's a freshman, but I'm going to hold him accountable. Because there's no way you should be skipping your reads. We've been hearing about how this kid is consistent and mature beyond his age, but yet he is not making consistent reads. He is not making the consistent reads. He's skipping reads. He's throwing in a double and triple coverage and quadruple coverage and throwing with 5 people hovered around 1 receiver. The interception to Drake London, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vons, and Michael Pittman. But you're going to throw to Drake London, who has 3 people draped all over him. That's a problem. That's a problem. That is a problem. And, I mean, we're hearing, I mean, Clay Helton is saying he'll be shocked if Slovis has a bad game this week because he had a great week. Okay, well, we'll see. I won't be shocked if he doesn't have a good game against the top defense in the conference. This isn't Matt Barkley. This isn't Sam Darnold. This isn't Matt Leiner. This is Keaton Slovis. He's a freshman still. But we're going to see what we get out of him. If he has a good game and they lose, then A, that's something else. But we got to see something different, though. We got to see something different from this team. What are some keys to the game for you, Dina? What are some keys to this upcoming game?
I think the biggest thing is just taking what the defense gives you. You know, like we've both said, if it's not there, don't throw it up. Just, you know, run the ball. Just because you say you're an air raid, you know. And I know people were excited all preseason about the air raid, but you know, if it's not working, then you got to adjust. You got to run the ball. You can't, you know, if that's what's going to work. Well, and you got to give it to people who are going to, you know, get the first down. Like, I think I think I saw that Carr had a rough game against BYU.
Yeah, he, from a rushing standpoint, he only got 9 carries.
And then, you know, when they put Step in, he was getting yardage, right?
He was. I think he had 33 yards on 3 carries.
I don't think there's anything wrong with then. If Carr's having a bad game, then don't give him the carry. Give it to someone who's having a good game. That's just common sense. I don't care about depth chart. If it's going to get you the win, give it to someone who's going to get the yardage.
I think
otherwise, it's fucking stupid. Sorry.
You're good. I think that's the issue with USC is that they try to keep people happy.
He'll get it eventually. He'll get it eventually. And it's not Carr. I'm not just talking about Carr. This has been going on for seasons and seasons. Like, they keep doing the same thing, thinking, oh, it'll work. It'll work. A spark will hit. And then it doesn't. So you got to switch it up somehow.
They have to. I wholeheartedly agree with that. They have to. And if they, you know, and I think that's the thing, is just they don't. I don't get it with USC and how the way they're coached, because it was a lot like 2018. It was a lot like last season. And we keep hearing how this is going to be different. And then Clay Helton goes, well, this team is built for this. This team is built for this. Built for what? This is half of the reason why Helton could potentially be out the door, because at the end of the day, if they can't get it together, and let's say Utah blows them out. If they don't get it together, ultimately it falls back on Helton. Because as the head coach, you're not doing something right, and you've had multiple times to get it together. We thought the Rose Bowl season, 2016 and 2017, would be turning a corner. Yeah, we could sit there and say, well, the players need to do this. Yes, the players do need to do it. But as Deion Bailey said it on Twitter, you have to come ready to play. Deion Bailey on Twitter said a lot of the players didn't like Kiffin, and they went 11-2.
At the end of the day, you just got to make adjustments.
I agree. I think that's the biggest thing, is they have to take whatever Utah is giving them. They have to take. They have to play a clean game. And special teams need to be special. I don't know what's up with special teams.
I don't understand what's up with this punter.
I don't know either. Like, apparently he was booming kicks, and I'm not saying that I don't believe that he wasn't booming kicks. I'm sure he was, but what is going on? Like, are they just saying, no, don't try to kick the ball out the end zone?
I don't understand that. Why not?
If that's the case, if that's what's being coached, then Baxter needs to go, like, right now.
You know, I think Baxter needs to go a year or two ago, but
Baxter should have been gone after last season. It's what I don't get. It's, if you're going to clean up the staff, clean up the staff. But I don't know what it is that isn't being done, or what they're looking at. I really honestly don't know. So, I mean, I guess we'll see how it all plays out for USC. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think that's one of them. I think playing a clean football game, they have to win in the trenches. The game is going to be win and lost on the trenches against this Utah team. That's going to be the ultimate thing. They're going to have to really win the game in the trenches. If they can't win the game in the trenches, they can't win the game in the trenches on an offensive and a defensive line, then they have no business. They have no business really being in that game, because really, Utah is a physical team. They have a physical front seven.
Right.
They have a very physical front seven. And you're going to have to bring it against Utah. You're going to have to put your big boy pants on. And they've been talking about the strength and conditioning, but yet they were getting manhandled by BYU's three-man front. They had issues blocking BYU's three-man front. That is what I don't understand. So, again, I really hope... How can I put it? I just really hope that BYU... the BYU game was a wake-up call, but Utah is no joke. They're looking to come in to make a statement, too. The right. thing with Utah is that Utah wants to be known as a college football playoff contender. They want to get to the Rose Bowl. They want to win the conference and play in the Rose Bowl or play for a college football playoff championship. Play for a national championship. A win, although with USC is different, a win could solidify that. A win could put them, it could start that serious discussion. Although they got to play Washington and Stanford still. They still got to play certain teams. But it's there. The discussion will start up. They want to, they're tired of the narrative of we can't win in Los Angeles. We can't beat USC in Los Angeles. The home team has won the last few years. They're tired of that. They're tired of it. And they want to prove a point. And they're going to prove a point on national TV against USC, against what people say the pride, the blue blood of the conference, and I don't, you know, regardless of what people say, USC is the pride of the Pac-12 conference, because when USC is successful, the Pac-12, there's all eyes on the Pac-12. I'm sorry.
Right.
And so they beat USC, especially like the way they did in Salt Lake City last year, where they manhandled USC. If they beat USC in a primetime nationally televised game where all eyes are on you, oh, that'll really get some discussion here for Utah. That'll really get people talking about Utah like that. But that's the thing. They see a wounded USC team. They see a USC team that lost to BYU, and they're like, oh, it's time to go to work. So Utah is going to come with it. And they're going to look to come into LA and show it against USC on national TV. But that's how I see it. I do think with Utah's defense, and let's talk about USC's offense against Utah's defense. And that's one thing is, and it's a key that I brought up, was that they're going to have to keep Keaton Slovis clean. Either that or they're going to have to get the ball out of his hands quickly. You're going to really have to get the ball out of Keaton Slovis' hands quickly. Because Bradley Anae, and Bradley Anae, who is one of the leaders in sacks for this USC team, or for this Utah defense, he's gonna look to make an impact.
Yeah, and Slovis is gonna have to show some of the mobility he showed against Stanford. I think he moved really well.
He did. He does move well. That's the crazy thing about it. He does move well. he does move well with, how can I put it? He does move well with mobility to buy some time to get the ball out. But he's going to need more of that. And that offensive line is going to have to try to keep him cleaner and make sure he don't run for his life. Because you have Leaky Fatu, Bradley Anae, you have John Pacini, who is a transfer, and you have Mika Tafu. That's nothing to mess around with, really. That's nothing to mess around with. You got four seniors on that defensive line. Linebackers, kind of suspect. The defensive end, other than Jalon Johnson and Julian Blackman, the secondary, you can kind of do something against. But you have to keep that defensive line off of you. They have to keep that defensive line away from them, because it's going to be a long night if they can't block for Slovis. And right. It's going to be a long night if they can't get that run game going, too. That run game has to get going as well. And they only generated against BYU's three-man front. They kept running to the outside and only generated 3.8 yards per carry. Against a three-man front. I know Kyrus Tunga, Tonga is a monster, but my goodness, that's unacceptable. Like, that's something that really, that's unacceptable.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But we just have to see how all of this will play out. So, what are your predictions for this game? Like, you have any bold predictions?
Bold predictions, I think. Steph is going to have a really, really good game. I think they're going to get him into the rotation.
I think USC scores a defensive touchdown. That's as bold as it gets. I think USC scores a defensive touchdown, and I think... I don't know how else to put it. USC scores a defensive touchdown. That's the only bold prediction I'm going with there.
What about score prediction?
Score prediction. I don't think USC wins this game. I would not be shocked if USC wins this game, because I'm getting vibes that USC is going to win this game. I'm getting strange vibes that USC is going to win this game. With all that said, I don't think USC is winning this game. I think the defense is going to be too much for the offense, for Graham Harrell's offense. I do think they move the ball, but I don't think I think with the BYU game, there just haven't been enough for me to be confident going into this game I think Utah wins 31-17.
I think it's going to be close all game, and I think it's going to be low scoring. I'm going to say it's going to be 21-17 USC, and USC seals the deal on a last minute interception.
That would be lovely. That would honestly be lovely. That would be ironic, considering how much flat Pendergast has been getting. I don't see it. I don't know what to expect with USC right now. But I do think the reason why I say 31-17 is because Utah is not known to really put up points like that. They're not going to put up points like that. They're not going to really put points up like that. They played against Idaho State and only put up 30 on Idaho State. Tyler Huntley has shown the ability that, hey, I can throw and I can do damage against USC. They've done it last year. Zach Moss is just Zach Moss. But I do think USC, when it comes to the inside run, I think they'll slow down Zach Moss. I think they will, because they've done a good job stopping the interior run. They just can't contain the outside run, which is weird in my opinion, which is very weird in my opinion. But it has almost been, in 2021, it'll be 10 years since the Pac-12 started, the Pac-10 expanded to 12 teams. So Utah and USC has been playing since 2011. Their first game as conference opponents was in 2011. And they've had some pretty memorable games moving in the past. So what are some of your favorite moments? What are some of your favorite USC Utah moments?
Let's see. 2015, when they were ranked third and came into the Coliseum, and Cam Smith had his breakout game with 3 interceptions. Even though we lost, 2016, when Sam Darnold came in and had his breakout game. Let's see.
The Sam Darnold game in 2016 was a fun one.
It was fun. It was fun because although we lost, it wasn't. It was one of the rare times when we lost that USC fans were positive.
Really? Because a lot of people wanted the man fired after punting the ball.
Yeah, I just remember them being positive about.
Oh yeah, about
trajectory.
The quarterback. Yeah, Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's see. Other than that, those are my top two.
Mine was 2011, the first game in 2011, because I've heard about Utah, you know, I've known about Utah, but I didn't know how their fan base was. And so I went to that game, and this is when message boards were still a thing. They're still a thing, but talking with some Utah fans through social media and through message boards, a lot of them were like, well, how's LA? Like, what do we do in LA? And yada, yada. And I remember I put together an article, one of my first articles. I did it on a website that I don't even keep track of anymore. And it was just basically welcoming Utes fans to the Pac-12 and all this stuff. But I remember that game, just hearing how loud the Ute fans were. There were two sections of Ute fans. There was one in the back of the Coliseum, and there was one in the official area where the band was and everything. And I remember that game came down to a field goal to tie the game up. I don't know if you remember that. But they were about to kick the field goal, and Matt Khalil blocked the kick. And Torrin Harris returned it. Torrin Harris returned it all the way for a touchdown. And it was such an issue in Vegas because USC, I think, covered the spread. Or they didn't count the touchdown. I think it was they didn't. They counted the touchdown, and a lot of people lost money on it. I forgot what the spread was that game. It was something like that because nobody knew if the touchdown counted or not. So that was that. I know when we did a Q&A with Block U, he said that his favorite was when Matt Barkley got manhandled for on a fumble return, which I think everybody remembered a sack where he had the ball literally stripped from him and he got flung 5 yards. Another favorite moment of mine was actually the 2017 game. The 2017 game was my favorite because of how close that game was, and I was at that game too. But if you remember how close that game was, USC was down 21-6, and it was like, what on earth is going on? And USC came back, and then Utah scored late, and USC stopped them on the two-point conversion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that game was one of my favorites, too. I think that one was a very good one, too. 2015 was good. It was very good. I like 2015. Though, I think 2015 was what won Clemson. Would you say the 2015 Utah game or the UCLA game was what won Clancy his job? Or Clay, his job. Clancy, I don't... Yeah. But which game would you say won? I think it was the UCLA game that won him that job.
Yeah, I think UCLA too. Utah was kind of early.
Yeah, because it was after they lost to Notre Dame. And they won the Pac-12 just by beating UCLA. Utah was like beating Stanford when Coach O was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if that's the case, then you could have went with, well, why didn't Coach O get the job? And he had a big win against Stanford. But I think the UCLA game was what nailed it in. So that's how I view it. Other than that, let's go ahead. Let's answer a couple of questions here. And then let's make some picks. Because we're doing a new thing where we're making picks, people. We're making picks, so you got to work with us here on that. We make picks on Pac-12 games, and I don't know. We have to see how good we did last week. I think we did pretty well last week, but I think Colorado. Messed it up for me. But here's a question we got, and I got via email from Ron Smith. And since he gave us a compliment, but he's been a longtime Trojan fan for 75 years, so shout out to you, Ron. 75 years, goodness.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's a while. Fight on. Yo, that's impressive. But he has a question. He says, Harold has been dotting on Slovis since he met him. He had also hinted that Sears had trouble focusing on the passing game and took off running too often. What do you feel about the QB depth chart that put Slovis at number two? Hope to hear back. This was sent to me yesterday. I didn't reply, so I figured I'd save this for the podcast. Dino, I'll let you go ahead and answer this first. What are your thoughts on this, on that?
I mean, nothing. Slovis hasn't showed me anything that would make me think he didn't deserve to be number two. I mean, you know, he's kept a solid completion percentage, and that's hard to do as a freshman. Against Fresno State, 75. You know, there was only 8 attempts, but Stanford, it was an 84.8% completion percentage. And then even though he had a rough game against BYU, he still completed 70.6%. So, you know, and he, to me, I think he's been solid for a freshman. I think the BYU game wasn't anything crazy. So I think, you know.
I think the BYU game was a freshman thing. You saw where the freshman mistakes were coming in.
Right. But yeah, I haven't seen anything that would deter me from thinking that he shouldn't have been number two. You know, and someone said on Twitter, I think it was Randall Troy who said, you know, Jack Sears and Matt Fink went through two offensive coordinators and they both put him.
It was Alicia. I think it was Alicia that said it. It was Alicia or Michael. I think Alicia said that actually.
Right. So, you know, Sears especially, because people like to say that, you know, he should have been a starter, yada, yada, yada. You know, he went through T. Martin and he went through Graham Harrell. And they both, and I think, you know, they're different. They're two different coordinators running two different offenses. So for him to come in last place for both of them should tell people something. He had one good game against ASU. That's it. So.
That's very true. Those are facts. Those are just facts.
Another thing is, you know, the reports coming from practice was that he was the most inconsistent.
And here's something that a lot of people don't realize, because a lot of people look at Sears and they look at his performance against ASU. They look at that one game against ASU. Okay, so if we're going to go down that route, if we're really going to go down this route, okay, let's say we're going down this route. A lot of people look at it like Mark Sanchez. Okay, why wasn't Mark Sanchez starting over John David Booty? Why wasn't Mark Sanchez in the game when he injured his finger? You know, we go back to that. A lot of people may not remember that because Sanchez was actually very impressive that game. John David Booty won Rose Bowls for a reason. I'm not fond of John David Booty during his time at USC. Wasn't really 100% his fan, but he won games. Who's another quarter? Let's say for instance. There's so many examples, and they're all bad examples. I could say Mitch Mustaine for a reason, but no. I could say Aaron Court for a reason, but he bombed that game against a bad Washington team that people don't remember. Look, he had a good game against ASU in one game, right? I think the offense that was given to him fit him.
Right, that's another thing, too.
It was a fit for him. But a lot of people forget he got that start because he was the only healthy quarterback. People don't remember that. Sears was the only healthy scholarship quarterback going into the ASU game. So he had to play that game. Otherwise, if Matt Fink didn't break his ribs against ASU, or against ASU, against Utah, if Fink didn't break his ribs against Utah, he would have been starting that game. There's a reason why Sears has been last on the depth chart. There's a reason why he was fourth on the depth chart. Through two offensive coordinators. Isn't that telling? Not to put Sears down, but Slovis looked better out of the two. Is that a problem? I don't think so. So that's how I saw it. I have no issue with Slovis being being the backup at, or being number two. If you earn that spot, then you deserve it.
Right.
You earned it. You deserve it. That's the issue, is that people are too quick to go, why is he there? Maybe because he earned it. Maybe because he did something in practice that we're not seeing. That's what I think a lot of people don't get, is that it's just they're doing something in practice that wins them that spot. There is another question that I found. It was on Clay Helton against and USC against the spread. As I filtered through the Reggie Bush, the Bring Back Reggie Bush tweets. Because for people who don't know, Reggie Bush will be in the Coliseum for the first time since he left USC. For a college football game. For the first time for a college football game since he left USC. A lot of people forget he played in the NFL in the Coliseum with the Bills. But Reggie Bush will be returning, making his return. You think there's going to be pressure to bring for him to come back to USC? Or is the NCAA just going to stand? I think the NCAA is going to stand on this.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah, the NCAA, though I wrote a pretty good article on why the NCAA, it's time for the NCAA to just let it go. And really, it's been blowing up like wildfire. So thank you for those who's blowing that up, because every day I go on Conquest Chronicles or my Twitter account, and I just see that people are retweeting it left and right. So I appreciate that. You guys are real. Thank you. I've never had an article that got that much attention. 64 likes and 9 retweets. I thought I had more. Anyway. So, this one comes from Mark Rabb for SC. And he says, Matt, you said Utah is currently a 4-point favorite over USC, which is now 3.5 now. The Trojans are 2-11 against the spread as an underdog under head coach Clay Helton, which is true. USC is currently an underdog. Do you have the win-loss record as an underdog versus covering the spread? I believe USC, this was, and somebody put this out, Rain of Troy put this out earlier in the summer, or like in August. I believe USC under Clay Helton over straight up is 1-12 as an underdog. With that lone win being against Washington. I think USC is 1-12 under Helton as an underdog. With Helton as a head coach. Or it could be more. Because I have to look, but under Clay Helton, it's not the best. It's not the best. I have to look that up. It's honestly, it's not the best. It is seriously not the best at all. Here, I'll look at this right now. I think somebody wrote an article about this, actually, but it's like one in, I believe USC is 1 in 12. Yeah, here it is. Chris Fasala put this out September 17th. So he put this out on Tuesday. Under Clay Helton, USC is 1 in 12 outright. So, yes, I was correct. USC is 1 in 12 outright and is 2 and 11 against the spread as a dog. 11 of the 12 losses have come by double digits. 8 of the 12 have come by at least 17 points. Average margin of defeat in SC's last 12 losses as a dog is 18.8 per game. USC is currently a 3.5-point home dog to Utah. So if you really want to know how concerning that is, USC as an underdog on the road is basically, oh, it's horrible. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Dina?
I mean, I didn't know it was that low.
It was, and somebody put out a tweet, I think Clay Helton is the worst as an underdog, is the one of the worst Power 5 coaches or one of the worst college football coaches as an underdog. That's the craziest thing. So, anyway, now it's time to make some picks because that was depressing. I mean, here's the thing. We try to be optimistic and we try to provide some optimistic things for everyone, but it's hard when, especially when you come off of a loss and you're going into the next game and it's like, ugh, you know. Anyway, Pac-12 play starts. Well, it starts for most teams. USC's already 1-0 in conference. We've picked the USC-Utah game. I picked Utah by 2 scores. Dina picked USC by a score. Correct, I believe. USC picked USC by 1 score. Which would mean they would beat the spread. So, here's a game, 9 a.m. game in Oxford, Mississippi. Ole Miss and Cal. Cal is 3-0. Mississippi is 2-1. Ole Miss is favored by 2.5. Game is on the road. This game can be viewed on ESPN, on ESPNU, excuse me. So, who wins this game? Cal's coming off of a close win against North Texas at home. I believe Ole Miss is coming off of a win over Southeast Louisiana. So, who do you have in this game?
It's in Mississippi.
Yes.
I have Ole Miss.
I have Cal. I got Cal winning. I think Cal beats Ole Miss. The Cal secondary is pretty good. I think they beat Ole Miss, but that time zone thing could be a thing they'll keep an eye on as well. At 12:30 on ABC or ESPN, another Pac-12 team comes to Provo and the Washington Huskies to face BYU, who just defeated USC in overtime, unfortunately. Hawaii put a shellacking on Hawaii, or Washington put a shellacking on Hawaii. So Hawaii is currently 2-1 in the Pac-12. While BYU, again, as mentioned, defeated USC. Washington is a 6.5-point favorite over BYU. Who do you have winning this game?
I have Washington.
I got Washington in a blowout. Though I think Zach Wilson makes some outstanding plays. But I think Washington puts 40 on the Cougars. Too much. They're going to be on an emotional low against Washington. So, next game, 4 p.m. game, a 4 p.m. game on ESPN. Stanford and Oregon. Game is played at the farm. Stanford lost their last two. They had 45 hung on them in both games. Lost, and they lost to Central Florida 45-27. Meanwhile, Oregon beat Montana 35-3 after they just beat Nevada 77-6. I guess. Oregon is favored by 10.5. Who do you have?
Yeah, I have Oregon.
I got Oregon in a blowout. I think Oregon puts 45 on Stanford, and Stanford Stanford is probably the only team I know that has 45 hung on them in three straight games. But no, Stanford is not Stanford. Like, Stanford has not been the same. Of course, they had Davis Mills, and they lost KJ Costello against USC. They got him back. However, Stanford looked slow against Central Florida. They looked really slow. So I think Oregon beats them. I think Oregon beats them pretty good. And, you know, and Stanford falls to 1-3 for the first time in I don't know how long. That's interesting. Next game we have, it's Pac-12 After Dark on Pac-12 Network as Colorado Buffaloes travel to Tempe to take on the number 24, the ranked 24 Arizona State Sun Devils. ASU, again, I think is the second team ranked in the Pac-12 South. It was USC. They defeated Michigan State 10-7 in a low scoring game. One that the Pac-12 refs said they admitted that they made a mistake. Colorado just lost to Air Force in overtime. They lost to the ROTC in overtime. ASU is favored by 8.5. I don't know about you, Dina, but I'm going Colorado on this one.
Yeah, this one's tough.
I think Colorado bounces back. There's not much from this. I still don't see much from the Sun Devils that makes me think that, oh, you know, they could do some. I don't see much. So I have to go with Colorado on this one. I think Colorado upsets ASU. Don't think too hard on this, Tina.
I don't know. This is probably the hardest one.
But you can see, like, either or, right? Like, it could go. Yeah. The game could go either way. The game could go either way.
I'm going to give ASU the edge just because it's at home.
Yeah, the game could go either way. I don't see it. Like,
but
I think if there's any game, this is the game that loses. But yeah, it is a coin toss either way. I'm going with Colorado on this one. I'm gonna have to go with Colorado on this one. So our last Pac-12 game of the night or of the week. comes in Pullman, Washington. Number 19, Washington State and UCLA. UCLA have only scored 14 points in all three of their games.
Yeah, I think
USC
the air raid annihilates them.
This game's going to get ugly. I got Washington State. I have Washington State. UCLA really, that's crazy. UCLA has only scored 14 points in three straight games. They have not gotten any higher than 14 points.
Wow.
They lost to Cincinnati 24-14. They lost to San Diego State 23-14. And they lost to Oklahoma 48-14. Meanwhile, Washington State beat New Mexico State 58-7. They beat Northern Colorado 59-17. And they won by a touchdown against Houston, which really hurt me in Pick'em. It did. They were fine because I had them by 14, and then that happened.
But on that note, I think it should do it.
Yes, that will do it for us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at CChroniclesSPN. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt A. Lowry.
You can follow me at Always Compete.
Also be sure to listen to us on Megaphone, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And yeah, again, let us know what you think of the podcast. But until then, we'll have, let's pray on the game. And fight on, everyone.
Fight on.